Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Gray Leopard Code with Gary Norris Gray. Gary will be coming to you each Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking sports live on GLC.
High on a hill, it calls to me, to be well, little cable cars, climb halfway to the stars. Morning fog may chill the air, I don't care, my love waits there. San Francisco, above the blue, and windy sea, when I come home to you, San Francisco, your golden sun will shine.
This week, spanning decades of songs, when the Giants win at AT&T Park, they play that song. Welcome to the GLC, I'm Greg, there we go. Another weekend. Get the Women's World Cup. The Washington Football Club. Baseball starting. But let's start off with a new hockey team in Division One called Hockey. Tennessee State University will build a hockey team this year, the first predominantly African-American hockey team in the college ranks. Check it out.
And welcome back to The Factor Uncensored. Tennessee State University is stepping into new territory for its sports department. The school is now the first historically black college and university, HBCU, to have an ice hockey program. The men's team is set to start in 2024. Let's talk about it. Joining me now here on The Factor Uncensored, sports journalists Sierra Nicole, Cameron Davis, and Barry Laminack. Glad to have you all here on The Factor Uncensored. So your thoughts about Tennessee State starting this program?
I think it's amazing, honestly, because it's just something different and it's versatile to what they don't have. Covering HBCUs across the nation this past year didn't have it, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so just that's something new, and I think it'll bring a lot of culture and diversity to all of the HBCUs and, you know, bring people that aren't black to HBCUs.
And I can't remember, I'm just thinking, when we interviewed the coach only a few weeks ago or a few months ago, was the HBCU where they started the first black gymnastics team.
Mm.
And I can't remember what it is. Barry, you're a sports journalist. What the hell are you doing?
Well,
are you on break?
I'm supposed to know that. I know it. Gymnastics,
so,
too?
So, Tenora, look that up while we talk about it. But first of all, let's talk about Tennessee Fisk University. They started their first black gymnastics. But they're like, and what do you want me to say?
I mean, like.
Okay, let's get back to Tennessee State, though.
Yeah.
Ice hockey. Typically, not what we think of when we think of a HBCU and a black sport and a black school.
All right. Me? So,
yeah.
I think it's good. You talk about expansion and wanting to expand HBCUs with people. All college sports is an opportunity. So, getting to play at the next level, high school athletes coming to play hockey, whether it's at an HBCU or D1 school, D2, D3, it's another opportunity. So I think it's good for HBCUs, and I don't see nothing wrong with it. I like it.
Barry, is this their chance to shine?
I think so. You know, it's what I found interesting when I was reading the article about it is I like the fact that not only are they doing this, but they also said they're trying to set up a women's program at the same time, which I think is also really cool of them to not just stop at a men's hockey team, but also add a women's hockey team to it. And I hope that it catches on, because I'll be honest with you, I wasn't a hockey fan until this year. Mm-hmm. And I started watching hockey, and I have really fell in love with the sport. And I think that we tend to listen to people in the media, talking heads like us, and some of the stereotypes that you hear, and you think, oh, well, you know, hockey, that's there's no black people in hockey. That couldn't be further from the truth. There's mm-hmm. plenty of black people in hockey. There's always been black people in hockey. There's black Hall of Famers. Grant Fuhr is the first black Hall of Famer in the NHL. So it's the stereotypes that make us think that this is really a bigger deal than I think it is, simply because black people have always played hockey.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, here we know that blacks have started the first professional black hockey team that we know of on record, 1895,
wow,
in Nova Scotia, black people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was something I had never heard of until I was, you know, I was informed. And I was astonished reading the article, like just going through and seeing that this is something that isn't brought to the forefront. Like where I was from, you didn't have, it was considered a white person sport. And like even like sports like baseball and volleyball, where people are limiting themselves because they're considered white people's sports. So I just feel like it's just putting it on the platform to let you know, like, hey, there are black people here. There are, it's for everyone.
It's funny you say that you were amazed at that. Let's be real honest, everybody. Are we really amazed at it, or I'm more of, this has been happening for decades and decades, mm-hmm. where we find out that, oh,
history's been erased.
Yeah. So we're not taught this. Yeah. We're not told this.
Mm-hmm.
Black people have always done amazing things like this that we just don't learn about, especially in sports. So it doesn't surprise me. It was like, oh, okay, yeah, it took this long for us to find out about something that cool. So, yeah.
And, of course, guys, if you want to look it up for yourself, Google Blacks in Hockey, 1895, Nova Scotia, and you'll find the history and the facts there. Another story we're watching, hometown hero and seven-time Olympic medalist Simone Biles says she's returning to the where the hell has she been? Come on, guys.
Get married.
Yeah.
Get happy.
Yeah.
Get a wife now.
Building
like,
houses.
Yeah, like she's happy. I'm extremely happy for her. Just, you know, another black woman doing great things. She's happy. She's married, and she's coming back. She on her. Beyonce. Like, I love it. I love it.
Beyonce. Thank you guys for joining us here on The Factor Uncensored.
And there are per capita more black hockey players a baseball player that you figured out. Right, last night in the World Cup, we win. England defeated 81-0. Japan beat Zambia 5-0. Denmark beat China 1-0. And the USA beat Vietnam 3-0 in a very lovely game. That was last night in the Women's World Cup. 512 is still looking for a TV deal if I have one. Another school is considering leaving the Colorado Golden Buffaloes. Might be off to the Midwest Mountain West Conference. Messi gets a winning goal for the Miami Thunder team. His first game in the United States Soccer League. Mainly baseball. Braves are over Milwaukee this war. They'll make it back on track with 3-0 shut down at Baltimore as they tie in the American League East. Reds are off Arizona 9-6. Continuing their winning streak at 3. Ben Smith and Muncy get the Dodgers back on the winning track. As the Dodgers beat the Rangers 11-6. The Yankees this morning beat Kansas City 5-4. On Carlos Stanton homer in the 8th inning at the stadium. The New York Mets are playing the Boston Red Sox at the bottom of the 9th inning as the Mets travel to Boston. It's 5-4 going into Bradley. We got a final score. The Mets defeated the Boston Red Sox 5-4. The Rockies defeat Marlins 4-3 this morning. And of course, the Yankees beat the Royals 5-4. The Yankees are 8 games out of first place. Tied with the Boston Red Sox, and this is going to be a long 5 weeks for people in Europe, but both the Yankees and Mets struggling. WTA, Nora Open Rudd and Zuria win their match. PGA, Irma gets a big lead in England. We're noticing the 5-stroke lead over Fleetwood on moving day. LPGA is the Great Lakes Bay Invitational. Tiger's cousin is teamed up with Shokel in the Bass Bay in Michigan. NASCAR, Sunday is ready to book those. I put 400 in Pennsylvania. IndyCar, Newton, Iowa. For the AV home front, 250 race. Formula 1, the Mercedes team did very well last night. As they go 1, 2, 3 in practice. You ready for the Hungarian Grand Prix tomorrow morning? The Hungarian Grand Prix has Hamilton and tire problems. He comes in 20th in the Hungarian Grand Prix practice number one. Practice 2 will be tonight. and the race will be tomorrow morning. I want to take a break before we come back, and I'm going to talk about the Washington Football Club and Dan Snyder and the reason why he lost his football team right after the
BlackAthlete.com.
Now we got the spirit that can never give in, with a heart that pumps stronger than 10 average men. It's something within, I was born to win. You can't hold me down, I'm a black champion. We had to fight for equal rights, on and off the court, and at the turn of the century, dominated sports for the love of the game. Endured the pain and fought through segregation, had to make a change. Jackie Robinson, first black man to get a deal in the major league, knocking home runs out the field. Led the whole lead in RBIs and steals in his first year, MVP rookie of the year. Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, and Minnie Minosa paved the way for Reggie Jackson, Ken Griffey, and Sammy Sosa. Half of all MVPs in the history of baseball's been black athletes. That's why we excel in all our feats, cause we so deep, mentally, physically, and spiritually. So all I wanna do is thank my God, we worked so hard, came so far, black athletes, superstar.
Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Now, basketball is my favorite of all sports, cause there's so many black athletes that ever blessed the court. Will Chamberlain must be the most famous, scored 100 points in a game, and no one to do the same as Elgin Baylor, Bill Russell, and Connie Hawkins, who's the best to play the sport, Dr. J or Michael Jordan. Played above the rim when they scored, hung in the air when they scored, made moves like never before. So all my black athletes, entrepreneurs, you open up the doors, you deserve a round of applause. The pigskin, the gridiron, where bodies be colliding, and the men must be made of iron. Where would football be without the great Jim Brown? Austin Payton breaking tackles and running for touchdowns. So if you ever had to stop him, it'd be crushing, because he still holds the records for the most yards rushing. Smooth with quick moves like dancers, Emmitt Smith, Tyrell Davis, and the great Barry Sanders. All I want to do is thank my God, who worked so hard, came so far, black athlete, superstar.
Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Jack Johnson, a heavyweight champion in 1910, fought the best of American men. And the fourth of the century took place on Independence Day, and the purse was 100 G's to pay. The most eagerly awaited event in American history, Jack Johnson versus Jim Jeffries. Nothing Frederick Douglass ever did, nothing Booker T ever did, shocked the world like this did. The great white hope came tumbling down, beaten and bruised and knocked out in the 15th round. Muhammad Ali, the greatest heavyweight champion of all time, at least he was in his mind. He gained the heavyweight championship a record 3 times and successfully defended it 19 times. The third youngest, the third oldest heavyweight champion. His career spanned the 7 presidents.
The eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory.
Charlie Stafford, the first black man to win the PGA, made it possible for Tiger Woods to play today. Althea Gibson, first black woman to win the Wimbledon. Arthur Ashe, Williams sisters, we loved them through all of their trials and tribulations. Bad times we faced it and overcame the situation. Jesse Owens won 4 gold medals in the 36 Olympics, breaking records in 3 different events. And all the black women began to dominate in track and field. They was great in 1948, and a team full of black women won 6 medals and represented in the 52 Olympics. Thanks to William Rudolph and Elise Coachman, black women athletes slash postmen, Flo Jones and Jackie Joyner was terrific in track and field, the best black women that ever did it.
The eyes of a black athlete, the thrill of victory, the
agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Life through the eyes of a black athlete. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Black athlete.
BlackAthlete.com. You know, you think about it, I was done almost 20 years ago. I recorded, was done. And we might have needed to do an update. I mean, that's awesome to go from the complete history of the Black Athlete. I can say, whatever we do it good. Always. All right, news of the week. Cardinals, DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver. And now I say the Titan, that should be interesting. Going into a nomad land. The Suns get these other players and they release Cam Ward. Alright, give a campaign to the San Antonio Spurs. And me to other hockey diversion alliance founder, Evander Gay, will walk away from this organization and take care of personal business. He will play for the 23 Edmonton Oilers. Mexico gets automatic bid as for the World Cup next year. As they defeat Panama for the American side of the World Cup. Once again, the United States men do not show up. J.K. Richardson enter Olympic trials. 100-meter races undefeated. And we'll be going to the Olympics. NFL, here we go. The Cowboys, the New York Football Giants, are all trying to new running backs. What are you doing? You think that Twinkle Toes is going to get dragged into the playoff without a Barkley? I don't think so. Golden Gate Bills will be closing at the end of December. There will be no more races. In Northern California, and this has been a trend all across the country. New York is closing a couple of air race tracks. The horse racing is going out of style. And it might not make a comeback. Monday, the basketball IRG, one of the Sabrina Ionescu against a Stephon Curry three-point challenge. And my advocate, both of these guys are friends. Curry and Ionescu know each other. And they said, yeah, let's do it. Let's go for it. WNBA was the All-Star game Saturday. And Team Stewart beat Team Wilson 90. 97-83. Joe Wall my boys, Brittany Grimes and AD to this. A record. Tuesday, limited schedule. The Phoenix Mercury to beat the Sun. 72-66. Now we're good, 27 points. Atlanta gets back in the playoff picture in the WNBA 82-83 win. As we get past the midway point of WNBA season, one more month and we'll be in the playoffs. Looks like it's going to be the New York Liberty against the Las Vegas Aces for the WNBA championship. We will see. But that's what it looks like right now in the WNBA. Moving on. Women's World Cup. United States play Vietnam on Friday. It was a first game jitter, whatever you want to call it. But they won. It will go to aggregate scores at the end of the tournament. And that's why the first game is so important. The first game of the night. Last week with the Commonwealth going through as the Aussies beat Ireland and New Zealand beat Norway 1-0. Nigeria, oh, they were great. The Green Wave was great. But they could not beat the Canadians and they end up in a 0-0 die on Friday. Wednesday, Thursday. The Philippines lost to Switzerland 2-0 and a call brought back. The Philippines scored the first half and called back by air pass. And the Philippines never recovered, and the Swiss scored 2 in the second half. Meanwhile, Spain blew up Costa Rica in the first 5 minutes of their game and won 3-0. The first two teams will go in the second round. Unlike the other years where it was 3, they cut it down to 2, but they increased the bracket. So they cut down the wild card round, but they increased the number of teams. Philippines, Vietnam is their first visit to the World Cup team. PGA, last week, you know, some people have talent. Stephen Curry is ridiculous. He gets an overwhelming last Saturday at the Celebrity Bowl tournament. And then he turns around and wins the tournament. Getting an eagle or 18 to wrap up the tournament. And it is what superstars do. Last week also the Guinness, the guys over Roy McIlroy ran away with it. This week in the Barbasol Championship in Kentucky. And next week in the Barracuda Championship in Truckee, California, just north of here. So the Barracuda will be in California next week. LPGA, that's open in Ohio. Sweden's Lou Grant wins by 3 strokes over Philippine American Allison Caput. This week is the Grand Lake Bay Invitational of Michigan. And this week is the Amadi Yvonne Championship in France. WTA Carlos Alcaraz dethrones the Joker Djokovic at Wimbledon 9-24th Major Championship. NASCAR last week is the Crisis 301. In New Hampshire, and it moved to Monday afternoon. Martin Truex wins the short race by rain in New Hampshire. IndyCar, they go north to the border. In Toronto, last week, a Christian Lundgaard wins over hours below Breaking Below's 4-game win streak. Christian Lundgaard wins the Indy Toronto Canada IndyCar race. Last week, Formula 1 name off. As the Mercedes-Benz team continues to struggle, this week is the Hungarian Grand Prix tomorrow morning. We go to the West Coast about 6:30 in the morning, West Coast time. I don't know what you guys will get for in the morning, but that's easy to get to see the race. And Lewis Hamilton is not having a good year. He really isn't. This practice yesterday was terrible. As he came in 20th place. Can't do that.
I don't hear
and my girl, Ed Zabobio, from New York City, baby. Tomorrow afternoon, Andy was coming to the Cove. We got scores. Atlanta. No, Arizona and Cincinnati 0-0 at the second inning. Baltimore at Tampa Bay 0-0 at the second inning. Future games today. San Diego at Detroit. Wolf at Manning. San Francisco at Washington. Webb at Joshua Gray. Philadelphia at Cleveland. Winnipeg at BB. New York at Boston. Game 2. Scherzer at Paxton. Atlanta at Milwaukee. Wayne at Osher. Chicago at Minnesota. Nice at Sonny Gray. Pittsburgh at Los Angeles. Borricki against Denver. Houston at Oakland. Last game of the day. Houston at Oakland. Javier at Blackburn. And the A's have won 27 games. 27 games, they can break the record for losses held by the New York Mets at 107. On that base right now. As I said at the beginning, maybe there's a new day coming. As Dan Snyder loses his football team, the Washington Football Club, and he stated he would never put it in capital letters, never change the name of the team. He also stated he would never sell the team. Well, as Bob Dylan says in his song back in the 60s, times there are a-changing. The new ownership will take place within weeks. The Washington Football Club will be in different hands at the beginning of the 23 football season. We must congratulate Jordan Teeters and Amanda Blackhorse, our political sisters, for their untiring work. For 30 years, their work of working with the Washington Football Club and Not Your Mascot Committee in Minnesota. So congratulations to Amanda Teeters, Johnny Teeters, and Amanda Blackhorse for their unwavering battle with the Washington Football Club. The next battle is the chop. That's gonna be our next crusade, the chop, the chop. In Atlanta and in Kansas City. And this is going to be more difficult because both teams are now winning. So if you have a winning team, it makes it more difficult to change their ways. We will see what happens. My man, back in the room, was so ready to roll. Y'all gotta pay attention.
What's going on, brother? All good. I was listening to you talking about stopping the chop. And I know how diligent and how you've been in being resilient on stuff like this. But you hit it on the head. They're both winning.
Yeah.
So that means they're both making lots of money.
Yeah.
They're not going to stop it.
Nope.
You know, the Braves have a successful team, and the Chiefs have at least two of the last five Super Bowls. So all that chopping means we're making money. Fuck you.
yes. Michael.
Sorry.
You know, the job did not show up again. Until Florida State started winning in the '90s. I remember the job back in the '70s. And it disappeared.
It did.
And reappeared again. At Florida State University, after Florida State won the ACC, and here we go again.
Right. Unfortunately, you're gonna have to deal with that. You know, so as much as they want to say it's not part of their culture, and as much as you bring up the religious aspects of war paint and anything else that's connected with that, they're going to ignore it because they're making money.
Yep.
It's not going to be an issue until people lose money. And that's not going to happen for a long time, if at all.
I have to commend both the Atlanta Braves and the Kansas City people. Do not come into the stadium with headdress and war paint. They all go for that. So,
well, that's good.
That's one step. We got their baby steps here.
That's good. No, I do appreciate that. And I respect the fact that they respect that they know they can't get away with that without respect of backlash. So good on the Chiefs and the Braves for that and that alone. You know,
Michael, did you read the report that Tony gave us about the Washington Football Club?
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know what disturbed me about this?
What?
Is that the one Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington Football Club,
right,
have been doing this for years. I mean, years. And all the other owners knew about this, and they didn't do it for squat.
Let me ask you this. Just how much money do you think was thrown around? I mean, okay, so he gets fined $60 million.
Woo!
He bought the team. Hold on. He bought the team for $800 million.
Yeah.
He has to sell the team for $6 billion.
Yep.
I mean, that's not putting pennies in a piggy bank. That pig is loaded. And they're not going to argue with the power of cash made like that.
No.
And again, it's a billionaire and Goodell trying to slap their hands.
Yep.
I'm a billionaire like Snyder.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh yeah, don't do it again, smack, and walk away. He had to do something really egregious to sell the team. So, like you said, what he did, the behavior was going on for years, but nobody said anything.
Well, I hear rumors that the name is gonna change again with the new ownership name gonna change again. Mm-hmm. This will be the third name change in 10 years.
Well, I can live with that because Commanders didn't really stick to me as a name.
I like that name either.
You know, I was expecting Warriors or something like that. I mean, I can live with Warriors. You know, I don't think it's going to insult anybody. But you know what would have been real smart, and this is my
going in different directions.
What?
Why couldn't they go on the Potomac? And see, that's a specific name of a specific tribe. I think nobody would argue with that.
Yeah, but, you know, you got to... If they called it the Potomacs, okay. We have no problem with the name. We have no problem with the location.
Right.
Marketing, then their challenge is to make it profitable. What do they do? What do they stick on a logo? What does a logo look like?
It can't be any logo again either, no.
This is money they're spending in advance. Now, with the purchase of this team, Magic Johnson has vaulted himself into elite status. You know, he's a team owner. And
that's
a place where nobody thought anyone, brothers, sister-wise, or whatever, black was going to go.
I'm very happy that Magic got the team. I might write a letter to application. Get Johnson, seriously.
Yeah, but you know, $6 billion is $6 billion. I mean, again, Snyder paid $800 million for the team.
Yeah.
And
he
sells it for $6 billion. That's over. Six times over the price of the team.
Yeah.
That's profit. Now that's serious profit.
Yeah.
And you can't ignore that.
Well, I like to see more black owners of the NFL. That's gonna be a work of progress.
It's a George Jefferson problem because. It's a green problem. It ain't a black problem.
Yeah,
if you got
no
green, you cover your black. Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Magic has been mainstream for a long time.
Yeah.
He's had a piece of other franchises, and it makes sense that he gets in. He stabilized the money. He's not fly by night. Nobody has to worry about whether his checks will bounce.
Yes.
It was a good move.
Have you been checking out Louis Hamilton and what's going on with the Mercedes-Benz team in Europe, man? What's going on over there?
Well, you know, now this is the good and bad of black excellence. I really haven't been paying attention to Lewis Hamilton because...
Hold on.
I haven't been paying to Lewis Hamilton because I expect that he's going to succeed at what he's doing because he's done it for so long. See, so anytime I hear something about Lewis Hamilton, you know, I would think that they will try to take a negative angle with it as opposed to, you know, laud him for winning a race or anything of that ilk. You know, he's in that category now.
Yeah.
So if I do hear about Lewis Hamilton, it's because somebody wants to smear him. Not because, well, he won another Grand Prix race or anything like that. Sorry, but that's my attitude. As much as I love the fact that he does well and that he's kicking ass on the raceway, that's the way I think about Hamilton as they approach the season and when he's good.
Well, I'm waiting for him to win one race. He wins at least one race a year. And we're halfway through the season. I'm beginning to get worried because his team did not do well yesterday in practice. His big group team was terrible last night.
I wouldn't worry too much about it because
he had the best big group in Formula One.
That's one reason why I wouldn't worry about it. The others are trying to catch up, and it's a matter of time before, they will eventually load up and do things that would make it seem like, okay, enough is enough. We're tired of this guy kicking our ass. Hamilton represents a different type of situation. When it was Tiger, everybody saw that Tiger was beating everybody. I mean, really beating everybody one-on-one.
Mm.
You know, with Hamilton, it's the car. And they can say what they want, but the car represents a team. You got mechanics, you got pit crew, you got everything else. When you're golfing, you got what? You got the caddy, maybe?
That's it.
Exactly. So there's a bit more empathy for Lewis Hamilton doing what he's doing, realizing that if he's winning, his pit crew is happy, his mechanics are happy, and everybody connected with him is happy. Because they're all working together.
When Red Bull stole his tire, here we go.
Well, they did that because they're trying to beat the best.
Yeah.
I mean, Hamilton won year after year after year. Because he had the best of everything. And if you're going after the best, sometimes you have to take from the best. And that's exactly what they did. I can't fault them for that. It's not like somebody tried to sabotage his car or do damage like that.
No, it's right. It's amazing.
But either way you look at it, I am pleased that Lewis Hamilton is continuing a level of excellence that we haven't seen. A lot of times we don't hear about it, and ESPN won't care to talk about it.
Except for
30 seconds there. But when we look over his career, they'll realize, damn, this guy was good because he won so many years in a row and that he won in such manner and that he was so young. You know, I mean, we ain't talking about Mario Andretti. He's a young kid in comparison to us.
He's
a baby in comparison, you know, but he's at the peak of what it is he's doing, and we should applaud him for it.
His aggressive driving benefits him because
True.
Every now and then, Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen tries to do it. He doesn't do it. He can't pull it off.
Well,
because he gets too aggressive rushing the people. Hamilton never did that.
That tells you something else. That Hamilton is so good at what he does that the opposition has to slow him down. How do you do that?
Yeah.
You try to wreck the car. You try to upset his timing. Instead of thinking, well,
yeah,
we got to get our pit crew to be better at what we're doing.
Yes.
Well, instead of saying we got to get better at what we're doing, they're going to say we got to find some way to make life miserable for them. And race riding, it's a bit more dangerous than, say, riding horses because you get a lot more horses on the engine. But you can't risk your life trying to hurt somebody in a car.
No.
But that's what it comes down to sometimes.
Right. I need to call your cousin down in Louisiana because our racetrack up here in Northern California is closing. Golden Gate Field will be closing at the end of December, and there will be zero horse racing in the Northern California area. You have to go all the way up to Sacramento to get horse racing now. What is going on with this?
You know, they're cracking down because horses are dying. I'm sure Jenny would echo what I'm saying, but you gotta realize Golden Gate and Bay Meadows were there for a long time. Bay Meadows eventually died out.
Yeah.
Bay Meadows eventually died out, but Golden Gate was using artificial turf. And it lasts longer, but it doesn't solve the problem.
No.
As we say this, Northern California is in trouble because... There are no tracks that matter in terms of being top level. You have the fair circuit with tracks like Solano and Pleasanton. And things like that, and Fresno.
They're not big at all.
They're small.
Mm.
They're boring compared to that. And Los Alamitos isn't a big track either. So the sport is dying, and it will die out unless they find a way to figure out what to do about making the races safer.
Yeah.
And making it kind of easier for people to work. Right now, according to the calendar, you have racing on the East Coast in Saratoga and on the West Coast at Del Mar. Now, during the summer, these are the big meets because they represent East Coast and West Coast.
Right.
And some of the best jockeys in the world will run at these racetracks. But they don't last long.
What does the girl say down to me? What does he view this?
Jenny finds that this is dangerous because they haven't tried to fix the problem. There were a couple of unscrupulous trainers who got caught, but they didn't fix the problem. All he did was get rid of who was causing the problem.
Yeah.
And more horses have died. More horses have gotten in accidents. And for as competitive as Jenny is, she's a humanitarian. She believes in safety. And you get these horses going up over 40 miles an hour in a space where...
Yes.
We're defined to some degree, and if everything's not just right, you have a potential tragedy. Just yesterday, Saratoga had a horse slam and fall near the end of the finish line. Now the jockey wasn't hurt. He was taking off his mounts for the day. But the point was, this was big money because Saratoga only runs for, say, about a month, 5 weeks the most. So while everybody's there, everybody tries to get their licks in, it's big money. It's the best of the best. And if you're not in a position to show up, you're in big trouble.
What does Jenny say about the future horse racing?
Jenny's fearful about it. We have the Breeders' Cup that'll be coming up in another month or so. The Breeders' Cup was meant to be like the World Series of horse racing. You had horses coming from around the world, running over 2 days, females and males. You had dirt, you had turf. And for the format-wise, it worked. The format was working. But you have what happened at Santa Anita really putting a blemish on the sport. Santa Anita was a famous track, and the fact that the horses died the way they did and that nobody was really prosecuted or convicted of anything, it's a black eye for the sport. And nobody will waste their time with it. As much as money is spent on betting on football, it hasn't increased in betting on horse racing. You can bet on horse racing, but the attitude is like, who cares? I can bet a football game now and get all the action I want, or baseball or whatever.
Well, I hope they get it solved, because it's sad to see this track close down. I live right in there. I live about 3 miles away from the track.
But you know what, Gary? That's another indication that your section in Northern California is dying out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No baseball, no football,
nothing.
No hockey, nothing. There's no action at all.
I mean, I have to go to San Francisco to watch the Warriors. I have to go to San Jose to watch the Sharks. What are you doing?
Well, you go back to what you were saying before about, all right, if I'm going to go to Oakland, what am I going to Oakland for? What's going on with Oakland that would make me want to go? Like New Orleans? Like New Orleans, I would go for the food and for the music and all kinds of other good stuff. But Oakland has nothing that would pull me in as a tourist and say, come on down.
There's a Black History Museum with the Black Panther, but that's about it.
Yeah. That's it. But it's actually quite limited when you look at everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to make people think, well, I want to come and stay for a weekend or a week or whatever. You know, there's so I'm sure there are places to go, but where do you go?
Yeah. Michael, where is Joey Ohtani going? Or is he staying in LA?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Where is Joey Ohtani going? Or is he staying in Los Angeles?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if he's going anywhere. That's a good point. I don't know if he's going anywhere, but it's how can we say, you know, for the Rams to be removed from winning, from the Dodgers to be removed from winning.
They would not give the Dodgers. I mean, that would be suicide to give the Dodgers.
Well, what can I tell you? There's not much available. He can stand pat and still make money. But it's like, so what? I don't know. I'd be better off saying, the better question would be, what are you going to do to keep him, as opposed to, where did he go?
Only thing I can really think of is the beginning of the Giants. But the question, because Giants is, do you want to give up X number of players to get him? I can't see it, G.
They already know he's valuable, but just how valuable is he? See, that would be an issue for front offices to deal with, because you have to convince one front office as opposed to another that this thing is so valuable, you must have it. You have to almost make like a used car salesman to make the argument that we need to do this.
There was a radio this week about if the Angels trade him to the Dodgers and he gets 20 wins and 60 home runs, you're going to look foolish. You're going to look foolish right in your own neighborhood.
It's an astounding premise. Pitchers hit before, but we never had a pitcher hit like this before.
If he doesn't
have to hit 60 home runs. Let's just say he hits 40. He hits 40
well,
home runs.
He's got 30 already.
That's what I'm saying. If he hits 40 home runs and already has enough to dictate that he might be running for a Cy Young, that's a scary combination. You can't mix stuff like that up. He's valuable.
How things change in a week, huh?
Yeah, for real.
Well, you know, again, you know, I don't think that, you know, maybe it's me. I don't think the Angels are thinking this through. I mean.
No, they're not. They're not.
Well, you know, the crazy thing is, it's not so much where you trade him now, it's what you get for him. And see, my thinking is, okay, if you trade him, now trade deadline is August 1st, or August 3rd, something to that effect.
August 1st.
Okay, so basically we're looking at a couple of weeks. So basically teams have 2 weeks to put together their best Shark Tank type deal to basically try to get Ohtani. Now,
right.
Again, I could be wrong or whatever, but see, my thinking is, do this during the off season when one, you can get another year. Selfishly, you get another season out of him, and then you're more than I'm just thinking, you're more than likely to get a better overall deal than you would now.
Well, the Giants want him, but they don't want to give up players for him.
Well, scratch off the Giants, right? Look, they're not going to give him away for a two-day-old bologna sandwich here. You know, they don't want, you know, you're arguably talking about the, if not the best player in the league, at least the most versatile. I mean, you're basically getting a number two, number three starter and a DH.
So okay, you're, Michael, what team is he going to?
We're
going to play this game. What team is he
going
to go to? I got my idea. What team do you think?
Let it sink in what you just said earlier. He's got 30 home runs already. How many clubs have one guy who's not a pitcher who should even say 20 or 25 home runs?
Yeah.
You know, you're talking something that's very valuable. And he appeals to baseball fans, but especially Asian baseball fans.
Japanese,
you got to make it work for yourself. You got to make it work for your franchise. You know, it doesn't work everywhere, but certain places it would work amazingly well. I remember when the Yankees picked up a couple of Japanese players, and they did all right. But it's not for everybody. If he went out from the Angels, he'd have to go somewhere where he can maximize his usefulness. And you might be right in saying the Giants could intrigue him, but he's only in one of those two-for-one rarities. You got a guy who could potentially win 20 games and hit 30 home runs at least. You already know that because he's done it. You have to decide how appealing is that to your fan base.
By the way, he has 38 home runs. By the way,
38.
Yeah. So technically he's got, you know, so in a sense he's got 40. To a lesser extent.
You know, my big where he goes over would be Seattle.
Okay, and that makes sense.
Very large Japanese population in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with Izuki. Years ago, Izuki,
And plus they had that fair, the middle and outfielder, Ichiro, who did okay. But see, okay. He goes to Seattle. What are you giving up? Throw in the fact that he's probably only got about say three, maybe four teams that he would even be willing to go to.
Right.
Well, see, put it this way. It's not so much that they can't afford him, is that they just spent the San Diego Zoo on Juan Soto. who's a year away from walking himself. Here's the thing. Look, I get the reason why the Angels want to make a deal now, because their thing is we're not just going to let him walk and then be just, you know, holding a bag of Mike and Ike and don't get nothing for him. But that's not going to be fair compensation right now. Let me get this right. This is his last year of free agency, or does he have one more year left?
I think this is last year.
So basically, in their
lives,
we gotta, in a sense, like, if we gonna get some for him, we got to do it now. Because if we let him play out this year and he signs with somebody, and we're sitting here with a bag of old Stephen Smith yearbooks, we're gonna look like two fools and Boo Boo the fool.
Yep.
Yeah,
but the Giants, the only team in the West Coast that has the talent of the Giants. I mean, they don't want to give up.
Well, I wouldn't see the Giants, you know, I don't know. I think there's a certain team in Chavez Ravine that would be like, you know, hold on, Baba Louie. We you know, see,
hear me out.
Look, at this point right now, they want to get, dare I say it, full market value. Now, trading him to the Dodgers would be more than sacrilegious to many Angels fans. But
but see
again, as we invoke the Butt Sisters again, you have to at this again. I guess this is a thing of desperateness on both the Angels and whoever wants to, you know, dance with them. Because look,
right,
they are, look. His, you know, if he's gonna get traded this month, his value may never be higher than it is right now.
Exactly.
I mean, he's coming off, you know, he's already won an MVP. He's already, you know, been a two-time All-Star. He's arguably
award this year.
I guess, although he got lit up like a Christmas tree the other night, though. So
yeah,
he's not infallible, but and against the Pirates, who aren't terrible, but you know they're not murderers row.
But one thing about this guy who impresses me so much.
What's that?
And this is what people need to pick up on. Shohei Ohtani loves to play the game of baseball.
Sure.
Baseball people need to watch this because what this guy is doing is that he enjoys going to the plate. He enjoys pitching your mind. He doesn't complain. That to me is everything you want in a guy.
Sure. And the fact that he's, because think of I don't mean to overly do this, but think of he's risking himself every time he goes out there and does double duty, because he could be one pitch away from rotator cuff or one swing away from, you know, I mean, he could get the, now I guess the fact that he's a DH, that sort of, so he's not in the field as much. So
exactly.
Maybe on that instance, he's not opening himself up as much. But the pitching thing, every time he goes on the mound, he's risking a little bit because, again, let's put it this way. The thing, the piggyback on what you're saying, you don't get the feeling that he's just doing this for show.
No, pardon
the pun. You know, he is, you know, he genuinely is, you know, and you know, he's basically been doing this pretty much all his baseball career. And I think for the most part, begrudgingly, well, I shouldn't say begrudgingly because they've really embraced him. I think Major League Baseball has more than tried to sell him with what he's doing.
Gary, what more do you want them to do?
But Gary, he's getting national play even in Anaheim.
Exactly.
And again, I go and look. I get what you're saying about, look, we all know Major League Baseball basically has no toes left in it, in both of their feet. We get that. But to be quite honest, I think Major League Baseball has more than, and so I think Major League Baseball has done a great job of selling him, in a sense.
Yeah,
I really do. Besides the whole West Coast, East Coast thing, what more do you want them to do? I mean, you can't watch, whenever you see a game, whenever you see commercials for MLB Network, I'm sorry, for MLB TV, for, you know, he has his ad for the shoe company. Pretty much all of their billboards, you can't go on MLB.com without seeing his image or his like or what have you. What more specific? I mean, and you know that they're pushing him overseas,
right?
You know they're pushing him overseas.
Japan.
Well, okay. All that being said, what more do you want to see them do?
Okay, the thing is, maybe it's a language barrier, but this goes back to 1982-83 when the PGA, the LPGA told the Korean governors, look, you better learn the English.
It doesn't appear that they're forcing him to learn English.
There's so many different Latino headlines that they're pushing him because they don't get pushback from Latinos.
So they're not trying to push him to speak English. Again, I'll ask again. What more do you want them to do?
But the American public, Tony, the American public wants you to speak English. I don't care what language you speak.
I hear what you're saying, Gary, but I don't see that outrage. Look, Lord knows there's enough xenophobic folks out here, and it doesn't have to be sports-related, whatever. Let's put it this way. You've got a lot of these older folks that whenever they mention him and Babe Ruth in the same sentence, you know, they say, you know, they pee in their pants, in a sense.
Yep. Yeah.
I get that. But see, with all due respect, the hell with them. Because those folks who are still clinging on to the Babe Ruth thing aren't the core fans that baseball's trying to identify with anyway. Let's just stick to just the brass facts, the brass tacks here. Be quite honest, in my opinion, and you know, you're right there in the belly of the beast, so you may see it a little bit more. To me, Major League Baseball has done a very good job of quote unquote selling him.
Right.
I think the Angels in the years that he's been, I mean, look, you know, when his, you know, the first way, the other night, Thursday night. They made it a, you know, MLB Network makes it a point they always, whenever he pitches, they always show his first inning pitching. And when he's batting, they always make sure. Now, they don't now. I don't know if they do all of his at-bats a la like they did Judge last year. I'm guessing, let's put it this way. I'm guessing at the pace that he is at right now, that's definitely going to be so. Although, if he changes leagues, it may sort of change things because, see, again, now if he stays in the American League, then, you know, all bets are off, and then he has a chance to, quote-unquote, break Judge's alleged, you know, the Judge's AL record, let alone Barry. Now, if he gets to the Barry Bonds territory, then that's a whole other killer in and of itself. And you watch the games, and I make it a point to watch them on the Angels channel. And look, there's Ohtani jerseys everywhere, even those ugly ass Reconnect jerseys. You know, let me just stay on Ohtani. We can beat up their uniforms a little bit later. But as a whole, I think that on a national scale, I think that Major League Baseball and its entities have been I don't sense that there is a resentment from the league and I think they look at him as a godsend in many ways. And I think that if he were to go to a quote unquote big market, then they would just up the ante a little bit more. Now with fans, you know, look, if you try, you know, there's always going to be fans that just, there're just going to be some fans and some fan bases that are just going to just be angry about everything. Yeah. No matter what. They think things could be going wonderful and they'll find something, you know, it's the Joe Beningo effect where you just got to bitch about something even when it's going good. Now, all that being said, wherever, you know, that's the reason why this is such a unique situation, because of what he's doing, because of his impact on the game. And remember, this is not just a national thing. This is a global thing. You know, there is, you know, he is literally carrying his country on his back. Whether he wants to or not. And I think just seeing the kind of person he is, he doesn't have a problem with it. And that's a good thing, like you said, because he has the attitude and all the other stuff. You know, you hate to get into the whole he's smiling face and all the other stuff, which can be sort of discerning. But trust, I'm sure behind closed doors, he knows that, you know, I can make this work to my advantage and make a couple extra bucks. Now he ain't poor, you know, he ain't poor. So wherever he goes, it's just gonna be Damon Wayans will basically be following him all around saying more money, more money, more money. depending on where he goes. But that's the thing.
He was a rigid player in Japan. So I'm like, okay.
He could possibly wind up being the highest paid player in Major League Baseball. Now, again, that's where some people are going to get upset, but, you know, he'll put it this way. He did it. Smith Barney, he earned that shit. He's earned it. Mm-hmm. He's going to earn it no matter where he goes, whether by some act of God he stays in Anaheim or he goes to San Fran, goes to LA, goes to San Diego, goes to Seattle. Now I guess we can rule out the East Coast teams, I guess.
I don't trust the Brett. I think you would go.
Well,
I'll hold on.
I think before it gets that far, you have to examine the partners, the potential trade partners. The Mets can't afford them. The Yankees can afford them, but is his ego big enough for the Yankees? Does he have enough star power to appease them? Because you're talking an Asian Babe Ruth here. And even with that, although we know Babe is really black, there's backlash. So we don't know just how bad it is. And when you look at what Artie Moreno did, he's got Ohtani and he's got Mike Trout. He's got two valuable commodities. And if he gets rid of both of them, he's got a whole team that he can buy for literally nothing because they'd have to literally give the farm away for him. So he'd build his farm system up from the ground up for people like this. It's some serious questions that the Angel Brain Trust has to decipher.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this, you know, this is not something, you know, this is not something that's just going to happen just all nilly-willy. This, you know, it's going to take, you know, the next couple weeks, you know, pretty much, I don't say every exec in Major League Baseball is on trial, but
right.
Let's face it. If you're somebody that feels like that they're a player or so away, just on GP, you may just come to the Angels and say, look, I know your boy doesn't like to play here,
but
we can, we're going to give you this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do we got to make a decision now? Give us a buzz back. And Mike, maybe this is the Met fan in me. I think if they really wanted to, they could. But see, the thing with them is they're already having buyer's remorse with Serger and Now they've got nobody to blame but their damn selves for that, mind you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hindsight, you know. Hindsight is 20/80, apparently, in this instance. And see, also, you also got to remember, they have somewhat of a Juan Soto situation going on with Pete Alonso.
Right.
Because he's a year away from trying to get him. Although, with the way he's hitting now, he's probably taking money out of his own pocket
Let me ask the obvious. How many games has Ohtani won?
What has he won, 12, 13?
I think it's 14. Okay. Yeah, it's 14. Which is a hell of a feat
considering how freaking mediocre the Angels
are. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and see, that's the thing, Mike. You know, depending on where he goes, at the least, he's going to be a number two starter somewhere.
Yep.
At the very least. And, again, depending on the way he goes, he's going to be your everyday DH.
Yep.
Oh, so eight and five.
8-5? See, that's the thing. That makes sense. Because, see, I know everybody's hyping him up for the pitching. He's a good pitcher. He's not, put it this way. He's not the best pitcher in the game, but he's far from being exactly. That's what I'm saying. At the worst, he's a number. He's gonna be. He walks again. At the worst case scenario, wherever he winds up going, at the worst case scenario, he's gonna be at least a number two.
Yeah,
exactly. And I'm willing, And I'm winning that 8-5. He probably would have 10 wins if the Angels. I'm sure the bullpen has hocked up a couple of lungs for him too along the way this year as well. So again, it's you know, I really can't. I mean, I can't really think of a more intriguing piece at this time. And again, you're getting him, you know, for the most part, you're getting him at the peak of his career. I mean, he's been so far. He's been relatively healthy. Look, he's been durable enough. What's that again?
They got him for almost nothing. I can't believe it. He was undrafted.
Well, yeah, of course. See, they got him for, but see, you got to remember. Here's the difference. You got to remember. With all of those either Japanese league teams or Chinese league teams, they get bidded on. They have to bid on them. They have to bid on them to negotiate with them. So, yeah, they're not so they do have an investment. That's the thing you got to remember, the differences in baseball. When the Negro League players, when the Negro Leagues were infiltrated, pretty much only one team really got financially compensated. You know, the Newark Eagles did get compensated by Bill Veeck to get Larry Doby. The Dodgers, the Dodgers didn't give the Monarchs shit. The Giants didn't give the Birmingham Black Barons shit for either Monty Irvin or Willie Mays, and so on and so on. You got to remember the one thing you got to give the Japanese league and the Chinese league teams credit. Oh, you're gonna pay us before you even talk to him.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's why it's worked out because they recognize they know baseball's history. They know the deal, and they're like, oh no. They let their players. They basically have their little. They have their pseudo reserve clause there, where you basically you're gonna be ours for 5 years.
After
5 years, then you can venture out. And with some guys, because they're old, because some of them may be a little bit older. But see, what's happening is a lot of these, you're starting to see some of the younger players blossom. And also a lot of them are like, look, I'll waive the 5 years just so I could get over in America.
Right.
And therein lies the difference. So now with Ohtani, again, his free agency came up at the perfect time. Ichiro, same thing. I mean, the scary thing about Ichiro is, you add those 5 years in Japan, he might have, I don't know if he would have surpassed.
Ichiro the ball.
Yeah. And see, Ichiro could have gotten more hits than Rose if he had played all season. Yep. And remember, he did.
All 5 years in America, yeah.
And remember, he did 14 years in the majors.
That's
remember, he was still playing. So he basically did his 20, and it wasn't a, hanging on sort of thing. I mean, he finally reached his peak or whatever. But, basically, the thing is, Ohtani is, even though he got that Cheshire Cat grin, he knows what's going on. He knows exactly what's going on here. And see, he's probably said, I'm gonna hang out here. I don't think he was looking to leave the first year he got here, but I think the losing and the inconsistency it finally came to a head. It's like, wait a minute.
What am I doing here?
Yeah. Literally. I mean, I need to go to a place where I can play, because at least Trout, at least Trout sniffed the playoffs. He has, only time Ohtani's been in the playoffs is in commercials.
And that is one of my pet peeves about baseball. That teams, like the Oakland A's, who just don't care about ever getting the playoffs.
Well, look. When you make the deal with the devil, i.e. Moneyball, that's the thing. Because, see, the actual concept of Moneyball is not really new. Doing it on the cheap, with all the analytics or whatever. But the thing is, and as the Red Sox proved, you still have to spend a couple of bucks. You don't got to go crazy with it, but you still got to spend some bucks if you can see. I want to embrace what Tampa can see. Tampa and Oakland are basically the same. They're both trying to make a
buck.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, look, both of them are literally trying to make a dollar out of 50 cents.
Yes.
Basically,
right.
The difference is Tampa will do anything and everything they can with that dollar. Now the A's will not only take the 50 cents, but then we'll try to hit you up with smoke. along the way as well. That's the thing. Because, see, if Oakland had at least tried to spend a little bit of bucks, I think they would have had it. Because, see, if the A's had won or at least gotten to a World Series, I'd give them some credit. I give Tampa a lot more credit because Tampa's been to multiple World Series. They haven't won it, but they've gotten there. So to me,
Tampa's gonna move to either Nashville or Memphis or what?
Man, look. They've been trying. Instances of moving and all that other stuff for years since they've been there. Look, Mike, I told you my plan years ago. Take them suckers to Montreal, become the new Montreal Expos, and then they basically don't have to change divisions. Then those 19 games a year with Montreal and the Blue Jays.
Money. Yeah,
exactly. I'm not even going to get into the fact that you've got two teams in Florida that play indoors.
Right.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with that.
When they first started with Miami and Arizona. And they were, I said, what are you doing? Because it's spring training. They go to Florida and Arizona in spring training. So what are you doing?
Yeah. I get it because they basically wanted to get, forgive me, all the old New York Jewish baseball fans living in Florida.
Right.
So they could go to regular season games in a sense. And I get it, that's reason 157,006, the greedy bastard factor in professional sports. Yeah, that's nothing but that. That being said, you only need one team in Florida. You don't need two.
Yep.
You don't need two. You don't need two. So,
and now you play interleague, so it made a difference.
It's just more so, pushing the game, so to speak, because, look, you could make the argument to a certain extent. I mean, we see 18 million teams in California, two teams in New York, two teams in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You got to remember, there was a time when there were two teams in St. Louis. You've got two teams in Maryland right now. It was back, you know, even as far back in the day, you had two teams in Boston. And remember, we all did. There was three teams in New York. Yep, two teams in the Philly. So it depends on. Yeah, two teams in Philly as well. So it's I mentioned St. Louis too, right?
Yeah, you did.
So in a given time, it can be done, but there's certain areas that just doesn't merit two teams. I mean, you've got spring training, and you have minor league ball in Florida. Not that you're competing with minor league ball, but you know, and given what the economy is now as compared to '93 when the Marlins first got there.
Yeah.
They revamp their farm system, and they go for Ohtani as a showpiece. The Las Vegas A's end up with Ohtani as their centerpiece, and they make out like a bandit.
It could happen. But see, I think they're still, whether they want to or not, I think they still have to do one more year in Oakland before they can get there. Unless they're willing to play at the minor league facility that first year there.
I believe that A's are going to use the outlaws to get out of here at the end of this year.
Yeah. But see, if they play in that small stadium, I don't think they're going to have the cachet to sign Ohtani. That's the only thing. I mean, put this way, if there was another year, then I would say it. Because see, I do think that the year after, not the first year, I think the year after the A's get to Vegas, they're gonna spend some bucks, because I think they're gonna do this.
Both of their minor league teams are smoking. Those guys are awesome.
That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying, give it a year, because, you know, yes, we've seen teams go from worst to first, but I think even with the talent that they get, and you know, the more and more I look, the talent that they do have. See, the thing that bothers me the most about the A's, in many ways, they're still the Moneyball A's, because if they just made an effort and brought a couple of DC, you know, I'm not saying they got to go get the number one free agent, but they can go out there and get, I mean, just to throw out a name, what if they went out and got, say, like a Michael Brantley? Went out and got, say, a Starling Marte, who they had once before. They don't need to break the bank to become a fair-to-middling team.
That's true.
Now their bullpen is awful. Their guys, they're, yeah, sorry, guys. I can hear that groan. But other than their bullpen, they've got pieces there. Their everyday lineup has got, now, let's just say they kept Olsen and oh God, the pitcher the Mets had, Bassett. I'm sorry. Let's say that they had said, we are going to build the team around Olsen and Bassett.
All right.
That's a decent team. Now, yes, the bullpen would still probably suck, but
they have,
you know, and I didn't even mention Letourneau, who's probably the most underrated center fielder in all of baseball. The thing is, the biggest problem with the A's, and it's, you know, it's freaking laziness. Just laziness. It wouldn't take much for them. You know, even with the Giants, you know, not getting Correa or Judge, you still had Crawford. You still had the pitching staff. You still had Flores. They still have pieces where, let's just say, you know, just for shits and giggles, let's just say they just say, you know what, y'all, let's just try it. Let's just go all the way out for Ohtani and see what happens.
Who do you give?
Maybe give them. Maybe like the I like their center fielder. I always forget the name. I think is it Rios. I forget. You're gonna have to give them at least one everyday ball player. That's, I mean, that's
well,
a,
my,
that's a
my,
good.
My, right, currently, right now, the MVP for the A's is the
They've got players, but see, in regards to that, you know, the point I'm making is that the Giants went out and tried to do some stuff, and yeah, they swung and missed, but they at least made the effort, and they did have some things there. The A's have guys there, but they're still playing these money ball games, and
right.
and it's like, come on, y'all.
Yep.
What's the old movie? If you give a dance, you got to pay the band. I mean, damn.
That's right.
Damn, man. Come on.
Can they break the New York Mets losing record?
No, I don't think they're that bad. They're bad. Let's see. What is it? 27 and 72 now, I guess?
73.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you lost it last night. Okay.
And they got 40 games to go.
Nah, I think the 62 Mets can rest easy, all three of them. Just if you just go strictly by the record, they're awful. But
yep.
I don't think they're like 62 Met or was it 05, 04 Tigers. I don't think they're quite that bad. Now look, they're going to get a lot more pub because of the whole thing. And look, a lot of it is going to be on the fact that, you know, they're basically, you know, the franchise as a whole is a lame duck. So they're going to catch a little bit more hell in regards to that. But as bad as they are, I don't think they're quite that, you know, I don't think they're quite that lame. as bad as it, and I know that's
I want to give a shout out to Tony McClain, and he did a great editing job for Black Ages. For you guys, you know, you need to go to BAS and Newsroom and check out the series, Tribute to Black Ages. He did an excellent job on the most recent one with Norris. Gooden and Stewart. Oh, thank you, Tony.
I just, hey, you wrote the thing, man. I didn't do anything. I just added it on. That's all. I mean, it look, you know, it's, you know, series like this, and that's basically one of the reasons why we've been, you know, playing it up the way we have, is to let folks realize, because you know, I think, you know, it even took me, not so much took me aback, but, like, I realized that, you know, even the four starting black pitchers that are remaining, remember, two of them were all-stars. And, yep. and you know, Devin Williams for the Brewers, is one of the top relievers. He's the Brewers A. He's the Brewers closer. And he was an all-star. So, again, it's little victories that help, but you know, all this, what this series basically has done and will do for folks who haven't had a chance to check it out, is just, it just gives you that glimpse of a bygone era. I hate to say it like that, but it's, you know, I guess, you know, there's no way really around it, of black pitching excellence. And
yeah,
you know, the more and more I, you know, because I meant to tell you, I picked up the book a couple of weeks ago on Amazon I felt like the police were going to walk in after I got it, because I literally stole it from Amazon. But just reading it and looking back at what guys like Nuke and Earl Wilson and others, you know, went through. It's you know, and you know, I, you know, I'm so glad that we were able to interact with Mudcat Grant before he passed away, and you know that's going to be that book, and you know, it's somewhat dated now because it doesn't have David Price in there. But that being said, it's a, you know, if you really want to, like, you know, follow what the black experience was in baseball, I would recommend it to anybody. I would recommend it. It really gives you, it, you know, mm-hmm. it gives you, it sort of picks up from where the Negro Leagues were, and it just shows you how their offspring, in a sense, you know, helped, you know, mold and change, you know, the game. And mm-hmm. you know, it's funny, when I was looking over the stuff with your boy Nor, you know, I had really forgotten how really dominant he was for that 2-3 year stretch, man. And mm-hmm. you know, if the A's had just had a human relief pitcher,
yep.
he might have gotten a couple more years out of his career.
Mike Norris, I told people, Mike Norris threw his arm out. He literally threw his arm out. Billy Martin refused to use the bullpen. He didn't refuse to do it.
Him, Matt Keogh, and Rick Langford basically were killed by Billy Martin, for lack of a better word. That was about as close to baseball homicide as you can get. I actually saw Matt Keogh pitch here for the West Haven A's years ago, and you could tell that, you know, he had a little something. But yeah, if they, you know, and again, that's you know, it's funny because on the surface they had that 73 vibe, but they didn't have a Raleigh Fingers. Hell, they didn't even have a Darryl Knowles or a Paul Lindblad. If they had just had a decent relief pitcher, you know, just, you know, not, it doesn't have to be Mariano Rivera, but if it had been somebody like, if they had had, say, I'm going to date myself here. If they had had, say, like a John Hiller type for the old Detroit Tigers, if they had had, say, a Woody Freeman type guy.
I'm talking about relievers.
The starting pitching was fine. They just could never get that. They never had that closer. And if they had had a closer, they might have had their own, you know, 3 years in a row. But that's the dance you do with Billy. Billy is the ultimate quick fix. You know, he did it with the Yankees, he did it with Texas, he did it with the A's. But just like, you know, he is literally like the drunken sailor. After about 2-3 years,
you will get rid of him.
Because remember, Christine, here's the ironic thing. When I first heard that he got hired by the A's, I'm like, Finley Martin?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I was taking bets as to who was going to kill each other first.
Oh, it was like World War III over here. But it worked.
I think if they had come up with a relief, because see, you know, remember, in those years in New York, even the team that got skunked in 76, you had Sparky Lyle, you had Dick Pedro, who else? You know, if they had just, you know, if they had had just somebody like that, I think they would have gotten to at least one World Series. Because the lineup, the everyday lineup was probably a lot better than people give them credit for. Remember, Ricky was at the top of his game. You had Shooty Babbitt, and who I also saw play in West Haven.
I love you, the two guys
I liked was Mitchell Page and Dwayne Murphy.
Yes.
Those were sort of like yin and yang. You know, Murphy was the power hitting guy. Page was the everyday, you know, steady guy, good defensive player.
Yep.
They had that was a good squad. It really was. And see, God, I wish they had had a wild. You know, they did not. Now they took advantage of the strike year to get in 81.
That was the only time.
Because see, arguably that first year he was there. See, if you'd had a wild card in 1980, they might have made a run against the Royals. Because the Royals what did he win it by? 10? About 10, 10 and a half games?
Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. As good as they were, the A's were nipping at their tails. I mean,
I really enjoy going back. I remember that guy.
All sports have that, but see, and I guess this is why we're all like, you know, basically, it's something about going back baseball-wise that brings out the kid in us, you know. A lot of my memories with baseball, you know, through my dad, but just also me, you know, just learning the game. I always reference the 1971 All-Star Game in Detroit, as a seminal moment for me. And I mean, you know, of course, because of Doc and Vida, but you got to remember, for that particular game, you had basically 25 future Hall of Famers played in that game. You had 6 Hall of Famers all hit home runs. In that game. And I mean, you know, and it's just, you know, and you know, you can go to YouTube. That whole game, the whole broadcast, and whatever is on there. And
that was the first All-Star game I missed. I never missed an All-Star game.
And see, to me, the reason why I could see, to me, that was the first All-Star game where I actually knew what the hell was going on. Because, I knew baseball, but I really, it's like, I actually recognized what was going on.
Yeah.
As the game, as the players.
I had to get back to the uniforms.
They will at some point. I think, what was it, the lowest All-Star ratings in like 20 years? Along with its foot problem, baseball has a hearing problem as well. I get that.
Sure.
But at some point...
At some point... Put that in the way.
It's so much done for marketing. But see, again... Throwbacks. I mean, the Angels this weekend are celebrating the 82 division winners. So they're wearing the 82 jerseys. Simple jerseys that.
Pittsburgh Pirates. I remember this. Pittsburgh Pirates, you play 8 days in a row, and you would not see the same uniform in 8 days.
Absolutely. The A's had like 5 or 6 at one point with the green top and the green bottom, the all green, the all white, the all yellow, the A's had a few of them too back in their day. But see, my thinking is, if you're going to sell stuff, sell throwbacks. I'd even be willing to see, forgive me, Gary, I would be willing to see the Guardians wear their old Indian jerseys once a week.
Whatever,
you know? I mean, I'm just on the nostalgia.
Oh, the old 72 jerseys. I guess 72 jerseys.
Yeah, either them or those like the ones that they had when Frank Robinson's first year at the All-Star as the manager. Those were good. My thing is, again, look, I get it. You push, it's marketing and all other stuff, but even the youngsters that don't know what the hell about baseball, they love the throwbacks.
Yeah,
they love the throwback jerseys, and with some teams, and pretty much everybody has a throwback. Now, the only of those City Connect ones that to me look halfway. I like what Seattle did because they basically did the old Pilots. Favor because they have the old Seattle on the thing. Now the black pants is that's a bit much. But see, you got to remember, this is somebody who the fashion police basically dials 911 and waits for me to walk out. So I may not be the best judge of that. But to me, every team has a good throwback. Some teams, in a sense, already wearing their throwbacks. I mean, the Yankees, the only difference between the Yankee jersey from 30 years ago and now is that they got that stupid-ass swoosh on there.
The Minnesota Twins should be ashamed of themselves. What the Minnesota Twins did with their hats? You never change that like that. What is wrong with you?
See, they did a half-assed job of it. They went, because if you go back to those, because see, what they are is they're a hybrid of the 77 team when Carew won MVP, you had Lyman Bostock and Larry Heisel and all those guys. But they went half-assed with it. They needed to go all the way back because, see, remember, they had those baby blues on the road, those road jerseys were baby blues, remember?
The baseball cap, I got MLB cap. What are you doing with MLB cap?
Hey, well, if it makes you feel any better, they still have the two guys sharing a joint on the scoreboard. if that makes you feel better. They look like they're shaking hands, but we know that there's a drug transaction going on there. Let's be quite honest. But yeah, it's, you know, there isn't a team in Major League Baseball now that couldn't sell out their throwback jerseys.
And then you
throw in some of the ones that wear the Negro League type jerseys that were of the teams that they had in their cities. That just adds to it. But see, again, say it with me, the greedy bastard factor, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And see, what's kind of funny is so many of the teams who went all the way crazy have sort of gone back. Like, you know, the Orioles are a perfect example. The Orioles went all the way ham, and now they're basically back to their old jerseys from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have that black one that they wear, I guess, on special occasions. And I don't think they wear the orange ones as much, but their basic jersey is the same as they had them like in the 60s and the 70s. Now, unfortunately, you have some teams, the Red Sox, I'm looking right at you, that like to wear their red jerseys on Friday nights.
And the Rangers,
I like the powder blues that they wear, but those downtown Abbey jerseys.
You're in
Texas, you fool. What are you doing? To coin a phrase from somebody I know. What are you doing with that? There's certain fan bases, there's certain jerseys you got to look yourself and say, what are they trying to do here? Now,
or Chicago with the South Side, North Side. Get out of here.
The Wrigleyville ones are kind of whatever. Put it right. The ones that I want to see burned immediately are the ones from Cincinnati. The all black ones with basically Morris code on the jersey.
Yeah.
Stop it. You're the Cincinnati Reds, not the Blacklegs.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Remember when every time there's a communist issue going about with their Cincinnati, the red
day. That's why that was during the time of the McCarthy scare and
right.
the whole,
it's
you know,
red
have
red
you, red you, red have, red. You know, that was during the time when literally everybody was asked, are you a con? How long have you been a, are you a communist? And how long have you The Reds were like, shit, we got to change the name, man. We don't call them out. And we've seen this happen over the years. You know, that's why we have the Washington freaking Wizards at this point in time right now, too. But
of all the names of the Reds, why do you think it's the Wizards?
I don't know.
What's wrong with you?
Well, Garrett, you know, I know we got to get going here, but I got to ask, now that Daniel Snyder has been sent to his room for eternity, and it's going to be, and I hope he's not wearing asbestos drawers. I'll just leave it at that. But are we looking at another name for the Commanders?
I heard rumors already. I already
I vote Warriors. I vote Warriors, no matter what they do. It makes too much sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And the thing about it is they could keep the same design.
Yep.
They could keep the same design. Just
have
to keep
your cross to anything. Amanda Blackwood is very upset because she said that they might go back to the Indian image and you know what?
I put it this way. I don't know if you guys saw the news conference with the new owner. Basically said, we're gonna get the stench of Mr. Snyder out of here by hella high water. He didn't mention him by name. He was very gracious, but the implication that I got was, we're gonna get rid of anything and everything that reminds anybody of Snyder. And
well,
I read a thing
that you gave me, like, oh my goodness, this guy.
Yeah,
is,
yeah, yeah.
He
yeah,
loves
yeah.
it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I saw something online where somebody talked about one of his controversies. I didn't know of this, and it just speaks to how crazy it got. I was trying to be really short with this. Now, we all remember when Steve Superior took over as head coach.
And his
great idea to revive the offense was to bring in Danny Werfel and Sean Matthews.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Now, I didn't see this until I saw a photo online. Apparently, Sean Matthews came in wanting to wear number 9. Because he had wore that all his career in college and all his career, alleged career in the NFL. Now, thank you very much. Now, you know, Spurrier was like, yeah, let him wear the number. You know, he's worn, you know, guys get attached. You know, he did the company line. Now, all of a sudden, Snyder weighs in and basically says, well, it's all right but me, but I think as a common courtesy, you should go ask Sonny Jurgensen. So Matthews, in his wisdom, goes and, gets a dime and calls Sonny Jurgensen, and he basically says, you know, Mr. Jurgensen, can I wear your number 9? He says, sure, I don't care. It's all right by me. No problem. You know, Sonny was like, eh, whatever. I mean, he said, now you're going to catch some hell for wearing that jersey. I want you to know. So just know what you're getting into. And then I guess Matthews made the say, okay, yeah, okay, I'll wear the number 9. And then I guess Snyder, like, you know, pulled the double cross. Nah, you can't wear number 9. Now, mind you, number 9 is still not retired, believe it or not.
Yeah.
It's still not retired. It's only been a handful of jerseys that have been retired, but Sonny Jurgensen's number 9 is not officially retired by the Washington blah, 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 blah.
Football Club.
Whatever they call them. I call them the Washington Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings, basically. So they can But, yeah, his number has you know, he's, you know, and it's weird how that, like in football, that exists, because there's a lot of teams where there's a lot of prominent jerseys that officially haven't been retired. They don't get issued, but they're not, because apparently a few years back when Scott Mitchell was with the Baltimore Ravens, this fat ass wanted to wear 19.
Mm-hmm.
And now, who's the most identifiable number 19 in the state of Maryland?
Exactly. Are you on drugs? Uh-huh.
Oh man, he didn't want that smoke.
He didn't want that smoke.
It was like 19 of all the damn numbers in all the damn teams. You 19 in Baltimore.
Exactly.
In Baltimore?
Exactly.
Oh man!
Hey,
but
is it the guy from the San Diego Is that the highest number a quarterback ever worn?
No, Charlie Connolly wore 42, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
Charlie Connolly. Charlie Connolly won 42, but Charlie Connolly was drunk half the time too. So you know who knows. But it's weird now. And just as an aside, I believe his 42 is retired by the Giants.
It is.
You know, I have to look to see. I'm getting the record and guidebook in the mail in the next couple of days, and they have the list of all the retired. It's weird how now. I'll use the Giants as an example. Now, Gifford is retired. Sims is retired. 56 is retired. Roosevelt Taylor is retired. Charlie Connolly is retired. Roosevelt Brown. That's right. I'm sorry. I probably Roosevelt Brown. And Andy Robustelli and Sam Huff.
I know
it's retired with the Niners. I know it's retired with the Niners. I'm not sure if it's retired with the Giants though.
Okay.
All right. I'm guessing it is.
I would tell you what the Raiders.
Oh, they're notorious.
Raiders. Okay. Eight guys were number eight. What are you doing?
Well, look, put it this way. Charles Woodson, being the class person that he is, he personally asked Willie Brown if he could wear 24. And an old man Willie was like, yeah, go ahead. You good.
Yeah.
You good. But I know I think 88 is still out there for the Steelers. And I know Yancey Thigpen was still wearing 82 up until a few years back for Stallworth.
He was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's weird because now in baseball, because everybody picks such a bitch about when they were talking about Ohtani a couple weeks ago at a Met game, Cohen was messing with Hernandez about, you know, would you give up your 17 for Ohtani? He said, no comment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like,
mm-hmm.
And it's like,
wow,
oh, okay. Now, Gary, and again, I'm not trying to stick up for people, like, number is retired now. So you've got to kind of come to him first, in a sense, you know?
Oh,
you've got to sort of come to him, in a sense, to just say, may I wear your thing? Knowing that Ohtani has probably never paid for a dinner in Anaheim, I'm sure he could grease Hernandez's a little bit.
Is that good 16 retired?
Or Strawberry's 18. And there's a lot of people. You're not alone in that. They think one of them should have their retired number, if not both.
What are you waiting for?
Hey, look how long it took him to get Hernandez. And technically, Gary Carter's number is not retired.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's no. And remember, they just now. Remember, Willie Mays only played 2 years with the Mets, and they retired his jersey. Now, I think I told you the whole story involved in that, right? The whole thing about the 24.
Was that Cleon Jones number?
No, Cleon Jones was 21. But see, the thing was, when Willie was traded to the Mets, Joan Payson apparently had promised them that they would retire his jersey.
Right.
When Bob Lurie was the owner, whoever the owner was in 1972, when Willie was traded, Willie was not happy with the Giants organization. And see, the thing was, when you went to the Hall of Fame, you could choose the jersey that you wanted displayed in the Hall of Fame. The first five to six years in the Hall of Fame, for Willie Mays' official jersey in the Hall of Fame for the first 5 years was a New York Met 24 jersey. The Mets did not officially retire the jersey. Matter of fact, it was worn by a handful of folks along the way, one including being Ricky Henderson, the most notable. But when Brian Sabian took over, he reached out to three guys. He reached out to Willie McCovey, he reached out to Orlando Cepeda, and he reached out to Willie Mays. He basically said, look, we want you to be our ambassadors for the team. We want you to be our all-time ambassadors. We know that the last organization, the reason why I know this is because I was lucky enough to interview him, and he talked about it when he was traded because he was told by Giant management they would never trade him. They said they would never, ever trade him. And even though they traded him to New York, he was pissed. He was like, no, you told him you would never trade him.
Anywhere to go.
And they were basically estranged. He had nothing to do with the Giants for at least the first 6 to 7 years that he retired. When Bowie Kuhn banished him and Mickey Mantle for working for a casino, how asinine does that look now?
When the Giants moved from New York to here, right?
Mm-hmm.
William Mays was not accepted the first couple of years.
You know what the crux of it was, right?
I think it's because he wasn't
a San Francisco boy. They identified, and even to this day, to some extent,
Joe DiMaggio.
He was Joe DiMaggio. I was like, what? But
when I got here in 78, there were still two of
them. Yeah, well, remember, he didn't get into the Hall of Fame until 79. So the feud was still on. It was still on. When he got traded in 72, for about a good 15 to 20 year stretch, he did not identify at all with the – and see, also, now the Mets also made him a semi-coach because he took Mazzilli under his wing when Mazzilli first
–
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, he was the second coming of Rick Puig. And if you say that's just my point. But yeah, it's his whole relationship was estranged with the Giants. And when the
they love Willie McCovey. They love Bob Marshall. But they were like, oh, I don't care about my race. Like, what are you guys doing?
They tried to say that he was sort of aloof. It's ironic because they looked at him as being aloof, but if you remember DiMaggio, you can't get more aloof than damn DiMaggio.
No shit.
This is a guy that married Marilyn Monroe because he thought she was gonna cook. I mean, you know, come on, you know. Joe, you know, you still in there, man? I mean, come on now. You do know who you're marrying, right? You're not married.
Yes.
You didn't marry Lucille Ball, you know. It's come on. No disrespect to Lucille Ball. No problem. I know, but I was surprised. I'm surprised they let us on. I figured they would have cut us off by now.
Yeah, I love you too. All right, but what you got, Mike?
Well, they like baseball. Let's put it that way. Well, I like the idea of Ohtani becoming an Oakland A or Las Vegas A. It'll be interesting to see negotiation plays out because this is a sweet space unlike any scene in baseball. I remember when I thought Mike Trout was going to be the hot property. Well, it's Ohtani for real now. Now it's just a matter of who and when.
Yep.
Sunday, you play a little more music. You have a little more fun. And I have to talk to you gentlemen after the show.
All right.
Sounds good.
What you got, Tony?
I didn't realize that we're like a couple weeks away from the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah.
Boy, it snuck up. I ain't gonna lie, it snuck up on me because I have been.
Well, out here in California, it's going crazy out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not surprised. And you know, down here, unfortunately, it's you know, I get to see Aaron Rodgers puss every other minute down here. See, the thing is, they bumped them up for national games this year. I know they've got at least six on schedule. Hey, you know how that goes. Yeah. They're still sort of figuring out, like Barkley is still figuring out whether he wants the whole. He's really going back and forth because he doesn't want to screw over his teammates, but he also wants to get what he's worth too. So
yes.
It's, you know.
What is this deal about the TV show? He doesn't have a TV show.
Well, no, he spoke on
Hard Knocks.
The Jets are going to be the feature team on Hard Knocks this year.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So it's funny because no one wants it. They treat it like the SI cover. No one wants it, but they just sort of said, like, you know, Jets, you got to take it. Oh, damn. You know, that's basically. Everybody thinks with it. Oh, we got to be the Hard Knocks team this year. Damn. Everybody turns into Florida Evans. Damn. So, yeah, it's basically Jet fans are trying to finagle their way into finding a way to win the division.
Do that.
Oh, well. All right.
Tomorrow night, it'll be Angela Bowman going to the goal.
Tell her to call me after she's done, okay?
I can't.
Call the FBI. Gary's in stalker mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. he's got a better chance than I do because I can't make that commute.
Oh, man. Okay.
Oh, boy. Whew. All right, guys.
All right. Bye. Take care, buddy.
Take care.
Calling out your name.